Hey, everybody. It's live from Harlem in New York City. Yeah, you know what this is. This is The Ramble. Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Bubbles Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while.
That's the sound of one hand clapping.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to get.
Yeah. You're getting a rousing ovation, are you?
So, let's see. Since I last talked to you, you went to Paris?
Yeah, we went to Paris. I've talked about it a lot here on the show, but we can talk about it again.
Okay, because I missed it, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Paris?
No, I've never been. I've been to Canada. That's my only experience outside America.
You know something? You really should travel. You know, it's really good for you. It broadens your life experience.
Well, do you go over there feeling, God, this is much better than America? Or?
Oh, yeah, every time.
Really?
Well, you know, I have a really bad attitude about America, or maybe it's the right attitude about America. It suddenly occurred to me yesterday, because I can't remember anything before that, yesterday that, you know, if you don't think we're a terrible country, just look at the fact that we don't have complete and utter health care for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So how good a country are we that we don't do that for our people? You know,
and I think we spend more on it than anybody else, but yet nobody really gets the care they should.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, I've never had any great love for this country, and I love it even less now because of the most recent events in this country and the sheer stupidity of the American public. You know, but the American public didn't let me down. They just confirmed what I believed for years, you know. So when I go over to another country, you know, I say to myself, wow, you know, it's pretty good over here, you know. Yeah, they've got their problems. I'm sure if I were over there, I would read about their day-to-day problems with the government and so on and so forth. But look at France. How long has Macron been prime minister of that country? It's got to be like 16 years, maybe?
Well over 10, yeah.
Well over 10. He was prime minister when Trump was in power, so mm-hmm. the first time. So
is the is it safe over there? Is it clean? Is it?
Well, I mean, it's clean. Oh, boy, is it clean. I mean, you could eat off the pavement, you know.
Wow.
Here in New York, because of my what I call wobbly problems, I have a problem with my stability. I have to look down at the ground because there are so many cracks in the sidewalks that if I didn't look down, I'd trip about 10 times going down one street. Over there, somebody said, they have the cracks in their sidewalks? And I said, they're like glass, you know.
Wow.
It's just smooth, you know. Of course, you got to remember, we were in Paris a couple of months after the Olympics, and every town cleans up for the Olympics.
Right, right.
You know, I remember years ago, Lori and I went to Barcelona for the Olympics, okay, to do shows from the Olympics. And I said to her before we went, I said, you know, I've been to Barcelona before, and don't imagine anything great because that town is pretty sad, okay? And when I first went there, you know, fountains weren't working, streets had cracks in them, the buildings were getting old and falling apart, and nobody was taking care of him. Because the years earlier, when Franco had been in power, he hated the Catalans and the people who lived in Barcelona. So he never took care of the town. And that's why it was so pathetic. So the first time I ever went over there was just a couple of years after he died. So we go to Barcelona, and it's gorgeous. All the fountains are working. All the buildings are clean. I mean, you know, the roads leading to certain places were even and fine and terrific. And I went, well, it's all changed, Lori. And it was really one of the most beautiful cities I'd visited. But this happens whenever a city gets the Olympics. They just clean it up. So I'm hoping we get the Olympics here in New York. We really need the cleanup, you know?
Yes. I remember when they tried to they cleaned San Francisco up in 84 for the Democratic Convention. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Feinstein, I think, was the mayor, and they tried to make it look good.
Yeah. Well, you know, so that's what they do. And so Paris is just right now, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. I mean, a couple of things that have happened because of the Olympics that I didn't like. There's this place called the Place de la Concorde, which everybody knows. It's where those wonderful fountains are in the middle of the street, you know. And they used them in American in Paris, and they use them in a lot of different movies. But what happened, because of the Olympics, they held some of the Olympic stuff in the Place de la Concorde. So now in the middle of this street, which I absolutely loved, the circle, which I absolutely loved, they've like put in a tent and things like that, you know. So they've ruined kind of the flow of the city. Then we went to my favorite museum in the world is the Musée d'Orsay. It is the Impressionist Museum. It's where you have, you know, Van Gogh and you have Manet and Monet and Mayonnaise and, you know, whoever. They used to be in another museum. And they moved them over there. And it used to be the museum itself was a railroad station. I don't know. What is that sound? What is going bleep, bleep? Oh, well.
I don't hear anything.
I don't know. I heard it on my side. Anyway, so where was I?
You're talking about them.
Oh, yeah. So you walk into the Musée d'Orsay in the old days, and the first thing you see is just this gigantic, what used to be a railroad station, but now with all these statues and these works of art and so on and so forth. And you just could look straight ahead, and then at the other end was this the back of a giant clock, all right? I go back now, and it's like, 10 years later? And they built like a ramp through the thing, and they've just ruined the whole initial visual that you had of that building. And I wondered why they do that. It was just beautiful the way it was, you know. And then you go up to where Van Gogh is and so on and so forth. And, of course, we went on a Sunday, so it was pretty damn crowded. And if everybody wants to see, you know, our visit there, I recorded it and did it live online so everybody could see us live at the Musée d'Orsay. And it's still got the Van Goghs there. You know, this is a room of nothing but Van Goghs. You sit there and 360 degrees around you, Van Gogh, Van Gogh, Van Gogh, every painting you've ever seen of his, you know, most of them. It's changed. The place has changed, but it's still a beautiful museum. It's just gorgeous. So anyway, that was my favorite part, of course. But here's what happened. If you're going to Europe, here's my hint for you. Never go for 5 days. Because here's what happens. First 2 days, you sleep because you've got jet lag. Okay?
Yeah, what is that, a 7-hour flight?
It's a 7-8-hour flight, something like that. Yeah. And in our particular case, we figured, oh, we'll take a Xanax, we'll put ourselves out, and we'll sleep all the way there, and that will take the edge off the, you know, whatever, off the jet lag. But about 1 hour into our sleep, and I've told this story before, so if you've listened to it, go somewhere else, okay? there's an announcement. Is there a doctor on the plane?
Oh, God.
And that wakes me up a little bit, you know, and then I'm going back to sleep. I figure, you know, a doctor, it doesn't affect me. It affects the person who's, I don't know, needing the doctor. Next thing I know, they turn all the lights on the plane. Now you can't go to sleep.
Right.
Now it's impossible. And that went on for about a half hour, and then they turned the lights off. Okay, you can go back to sleep now. Well, screw you. I'm wide awake now. And we didn't get any real sleep going over. So we book into the hotel, and we figure, oh, we'll do some things and go out and get around, you know, as much as I can because I got the cane and everything like that. We close our eyes for a moment. Next thing we know, it's 2 days later. So we've lost 2 days.
Wow.
You know, so now it's when it's what day is it? It's the third day, whatever that was. Okay. We went on a Tuesday. We got there on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, we go to the Musée d'Orsay. And I'm not very great at walking, but I could do okay. If I had to, if we wanted to really look at the Musée d'Orsay, I'd have to stop and sit and do things like that, but I could do it, all right? But Marjorie has the trots. Okay.
Oh, God.
Which I'm told by Lori Thompson, who travels a lot, that the reason you get the trots isn't that the water's bad or anything like that, or that the, you know, there's bacteria in the food. You got off a plane for 8 hours where you went up in the air, and it changed the pressure in your stomach. And then you come down, and it changes the pressure in your stomach again, and that's what gives you the trots.
Okay.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But she's sick, so I can only hobble around a little bit. She wants to get back to the hotel. So we go back to the hotel. Now, the next day, I decide we're going to go over to Notre Dame and take a look at it. They're still working on it, you know. When we got there, interestingly enough, we were greeted. We didn't hear it, but we were supposedly greeted by the bells they had installed in Notre Dame and were testing out for the first time. So that's kind of nice, you know. But we went over to Notre Dame just to see what they were doing and also to do another video live from Notre Dame Cathedral. And, you know, we're standing out there, and Marjorie going, this is really cold. It's really cold here. I said, okay, let's start walking. Let's go down there. Let's find a little restaurant or something. We went somewhere, got some French onion soup. Now we go back out. Oh, it's terribly cold. Let's just get a taxi and go back to the hotel. Okay, this is day number four. Okay, day number five. I say, okay, today we're really going to do something. We're going to the Eiffel Tower. You know, we're doing all the tourist crap because, you know, we only got, like, realistically 3 days to do our vacation in. So I may as well do all the touristy stuff, you know. And we go over to the Eiffel Tower, and it's a Tuesday, and there's really no lineup to get up into the Eiffel Tower. Any weekend or summer day or something, you got to make an appointment. I mean, that's how bad it is. But there was just a short line. I said, let's get in the line and we'll go up the Eiffel Tower. She said, it'll be freezing up there. I said, no, we'll go up to the first level. I know there's a restaurant there. We'll go to the restaurant. It's warm and everything. Oh, no, it's too cold. I don't want to do it. So we left and went back to the hotel.
Oh, God.
And that was the that was our last day in Paris was the Eiffel Tower. Really, we didn't do much of anything. We would go out at night and go to restaurants in the neighborhood, and we were in a fairly decent neighborhood, and we didn't realize it. Right around the corner, there was like this whole street with nothing but one restaurant after another. And the thing is, it doesn't matter in Paris particularly what restaurant you pick. I mean, I imagine one is better than another, but you really don't get any bad food there, you know. So we had some nice little meals there and so on. And the hotel itself had its own restaurant. Good little restaurant. So that was our... And then we wheelchairs. We got wheelchair service at every airport. By the way, next time you take a... If you take a trip anywhere, just bring a cane. Bring a cane okay. And say you need a wheelchair.
All right.
It's just wonderful having somebody push you through everything, you know. So.
You get through security quicker?
yes, you do. That's not to say they don't, you know, want to, you know, look at your baggage or whatever. But you put it on the cart, you get it on your lap, you put it on the cart. They roll you past that, and then when we went to passport control, they see you're in a wheelchair, so they go, oh, okay, here, stamp, you know. So, arriving in Paris, we didn't have a wheelchairs waiting for us, and I had to walk all the way to the taxis area. And so while we were in Paris, I called the airline, and I said, nobody was waiting there for us. And they said, well, you didn't ask for something, anybody to meet you there, only to take you from at Newark to the plane. So I said, well, can we get, when we get arrived back in Newark, can we get a wheelchairs? And she said, yeah, they'll be right at the plane. And so we go to the airport in France. There's wheelchairs for us waiting. We get in them. They wheel us there. We go all the way to Newark. We get off the plane. Right there are our two wheelchairs. So
that's cool.
That was the best part of our trip. Can I say that? Is that?
And was it? Did you fly first class?
No, we flew a thing called. You see, they have coach.
They have 15 different things.
They have business class. They have first class.
And then premium business class.
Premium. No, not premium business. Premium coach.
Premium economy.
But it's much better than the coach, okay? It costs more, but it's better than coach and cheaper than business class.
Okay.
And you get a wonderful meal. I mean, I never had better food on a plane in my life. Maybe when I first went on an airline years ago, and they used to, like, serve you filet mignon, you know, in coach.
Yeah, I remember they used to do that. They had
Do you remember what?
The old 747, I think they actually had a chef that served some really good food.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the old days, do you remember in the real old days? I don't know if you go back this far, but I remember you got on an airplane. And everybody was dressed to the hilt. Men wore suits. Women.
I just remember they said that everybody used to wear suits, and it was like, it was very kind of an upscale thing to fly. And now it's like a flying bus. But
oh, now it's like you may as well go naked.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I just had some coffee, and it went down the wrong way.
Man. And which airline was this?
This was United, and it was very good. I mean, the service in this premium was very good. You know, the other thing is they have weird seats. They're big, you know. They're nice and large for you to sit in, and all of that. But you got to remember now, I've got a problem. And if I'm sitting too long, I can barely stand. I got to stand for about a couple of minutes before I get my stability. So now, Marjorie, I got to go to the bathroom, and I'm on the window seat. And then they got this thing in the middle. You remember how they used to have a little arm in the middle and it would go up?
Yeah.
This was like something permanent, and I had to climb over the goddamn thing.
Yes.
And then I had to climb over her seat. And I finally got out and went to the bathroom, you know. And coming back, I told her, I'll take the aisle seat, you take the window seat. You know. So. But it was the getting out of those seats were just horrible. But they were the luxurious seats. I mean, there was, you would be look at them and go, oh, this is wonderful. Oh, I'm in, you know, I'm in premium coach or whatever. So anyway, it's like another level. So they can charge you more for something than not as much as for something else. And it's all, everything's changed. Life is too complicated. I didn't sign up for this, okay?
It's not fun anymore.
Well, you don't travel that much. You don't like taking planes, right? You hate planes.
No, I like going to the trip you took would have totally freaked me out.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't be afraid of planes, you know? I mean,
I'm not afraid of crashing. It's just getting there, going through security, the seats are cramped. It's just not a pleasant experience. It just,
yeah,
feel like you're going through a slaughterhouse, I think.
Yeah. Well, I always used to say you have nothing to worry about if you're taken off. It's when it's landing that all planes crash.
87%.
No, 100%, because they crash. You know, so they're obviously landing. You say 80% on arrival?
I read that 87% of airplane crashes take place during the landing.
Hmm. Okay.
Although it seems like everything seems like slow, it's quieter, you think it's safer, but it's not.
Well, but you're landing, too. You're actually coming down.
Yeah.
And if something goes wrong, like a wheel falls off or a...
Yeah, and you're at a slower speed, so you're on the verge of a stall, so you don't have much margin of safety there or something.
Well, the most disconcerting thing is when you look at the... you know, they have all that stuff in the thing in front of your seat where you can read stuff about the plane and so on. And you pick it up, and the first word you see is Boeing.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, well, I'll just pray. Okay.
Boy, have they gone down. Jesus.
Oh, my God. They can't even do space right.
No.
You know, those people have been stuck up there for longer than anybody's been up there.
For months.
Yeah. Other people are leaving going, well, your flight is coming soon. Don't worry. It's coming in February. February? Wait, didn't they have some kind of standby rocket waiting to go pick them up? You know.
I think they had to send Elon, had to do something to get them down, didn't he?
He's sending up one of his to do
it. Yeah.
As much as I hate Elon. So. Yeah. You know. But anyway, so you know, it was a nice trip, you know. But it was way too short, way too cold. So next time we're doing it, either it's the spring or the fall, if it's, you know, to Europe, and you know, do 10 days, something like that, 14 days. Take a little more of a trip. Because once you've gotten past that first, like, 3 days, okay, you're good to go. But before that, you're just trying to get enough sleep and, you know, rest and so on and so forth. So,
can you get by speaking English over there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They speak. Most people over there now speak English. They don't make a big deal about you have to speak French.
Okay.
You know. And also, I mean, what was I going to say? They do that. And also, you never have. I used to always go get the coin of the realm. You know, when I was at the airport, I'd go get myself a bunch of French francs or now euros.
Yeah.
I didn't spend a penny out of my pocket the whole time I was there. Everybody takes credit cards.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
So I just did everything on a credit card. I kept giving myself a reason to get some euros, but I just couldn't, you know. I didn't need them. So, really, you don't need the coin of the realm anymore. Before, I used to get traveler's checks, like a couple of
remember those?
A couple of $1,000 worth of traveler's checks because you say, you take credit cards? No, you know. What do you take? Oh, we take some kind of European one you never heard of in your life, you know. But now it's like, you know, that it's simple. It's really simple. And in Paris, the main form of transportation is Uber. So,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which
and
I,
is it horrifically expensive? Or
no, it was reasonable. You know, everything was pretty reasonable over there. You know.
Like not worse than here.
Hey, we just ran out of time.
Wow.
Well, I was your tour guide on my vacation.
Yes, I was anxious to hear about this.
And why don't we talk to you next week, and we'll find some of the places you've been in your great adventure.
My wild career.
Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Bubbles Brown.
Now in its 10th year, this is GabNet. Talk like you've never heard it before.
Hey, everybody. How are you? Let me turn on the lights. I always forget to turn on the lights. Hello. Hello, everybody. You can see me now? Can you see me now? Okay. Anyway, hello. How are you? It's Friday. It's Friday night already. Okay. And I'm here getting ready to Monday. I have my ever since I got this leukemia thing, right? They want to check me, and they check me every first he checked me every 3 months. Now he's checking me every 4 months, and I think hopefully he'll say come back in 6, okay? Because I get tired of going back. You know, they draw blood out of me. I feel like I'm, you know, I have a doctor's visit with Dracula. But anyway, so we're having, you know, I'm having my my little get-together with my doctor. And we'll see what happens. Let me see. Let me get myself a little bit here. There we go. I'm just trying to. There we go. Isn't that nice? Okay. Wait a minute. Let me bring it down just a tad. All right. There we go. Anyway, so I get a little apoplectic about it, you know, but I don't think there's anything particularly terribly wrong with me, and I feel pretty healthy all the way around, so I don't think he's going to find anything that's changed. But that's all it is, really, is that it's a kind of a thing called the chronic lymphatic leukemia, which is a very common form of leukemia that you get when you get older sometimes. And what they do is they just check to see that you're not having any major symptoms or anything. And if you're not having any kind of major symptoms, they just send you home, right? They draw the blood. They look at the blood work. They say, okay, come back in, you know, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. I'm hoping that I get to a point where they say, yeah, come back next year. We're not worried anymore. But and I got a really great doctor. I mean, when you get a great doctor, you know, you hang on to them like they're grim death. It's really terrific. Really terrific. He's really terrific. So I, you know, anyway, that's it for me. Otherwise, let's see here. We finally got our water fixed here. Last night we had no toilet water. Because they did something to the water and it was screwed up and it didn't work right, and they weren't sending up any water into the top floors of the building which we're on, and they I had to, if I wanted to take a, well, if I wanted to pee, you could just pee in there. You know, it's the old thing I used to say, if it's yellow, let it mellow, and if it's brown, flush it down. Okay. So if I suddenly felt that I had to flush it down, I had this bucket that I kept in the tub, and I filled it with what water was filling up? Hot water was filling up, okay. So I would fill it up, and then I would stick it and put the water in the tank, and then I could flush the brown down or whatever. So that was, but then this morning I woke up, and by then he had done something about it, so we were okay. Anyway, we've only got two people waiting to talk to me right now, and but they're two quality people, so, you know, I won't complain about it, okay, if it's two quality people. It's, first of all, there's Charlie Wallace, and there's Josh Wheeler. Hello, Charlie. Can Charlie hear me? I guess he can. He says he's connecting to his audio. Can you hear me? I guess he can't yet. It takes a while for his audio to connect. Yeah, well, anyway, oh, there he is. I'm sure that was it. Hello, Charlie.
Hi.
You can hear me? Hi.
Yeah. I was shutting down YouTube, so I wouldn't be pulling a Jeff on you.
Well, it's called pulling a Jeff. Jeff was great last night. He did it without any problem at all.
Yep.
You know, I when we had lunch with him, he said, you know, I think I might be a little better on the show. And I said, why? He said, well, my doctor looked at my medicine and said, why are you taking this? And he took me off of one of my medicines, he said, and I'm getting clear-headed than I was.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, maybe Jeff is, because he's been participating a little more in the show and everything, you know, it's good. I gotta sit down with my doctor and look at all the things I'm taking and see if I need, how many of them I need. I know I need the cholesterol stuff. I need the thyroid thing. I need that. I only need about four of my pills. So I just want to make sure that I'm doing right by only taking those four pills. Hello to Josh. We get Josh once a week here because Josh is a, has a job, you know. Not like the rest of us on this program who have no jobs. We're not working. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Yeah? Anything striking you in the news that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, there's obviously stuff going on, but I keep up, but I'm not, obsessed the way we used to or whatever.
Yeah, right. So. Because there's nothing you can do about it, right?
Well, no, not right now there's not. I mean, we just kind of wait and see. But,
yeah, maybe in 2 years when we go for new members of Congress and so on, then there might be something we can do.
Right.
All right. But now, it's so the cards are so stacked against us that, you know, what are we going to do? Although I saw the big orange one on television tonight, what's her name from NBC, who did him for Meet the Press. She interviewed him, and they showed a little bit of the interview. He seemed much more sedate than he has been in the past. You know, I guess he's president now, so he doesn't need to be that obnoxious clown that he was when he was running for president. But, you know, that's what those people voted for, was an obnoxious clown, and now they're not getting it. So
I mean, I have not listened to anything that he's, like, if they play a clip where he's talking, I don't listen to it. I mean, I'll change the channel or whatever.
Well,
I mean,
he was defending Hegseth.
Well,
and his nomination of Hegseth. And, you know, he's really living in a dream world because I don't think the guy's going to get,
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I've kind of been getting, you know, informed by just, you know, like reading the newspaper or whatever. You know, so I saw, you know, like, you know, comments, you know, like, oh, he's doing very well or whatever, which obviously he's not. You know, but that's the normal the way he operates, you know, he says things that are just, you know, whatever, doesn't change anything. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything, help anything. It's just the way he is. So, you know, I'm aware, but I mean, I just.
Well, he's sticking with Hegseth. He says, I'm sticking with him. He's the guy.
So
and
far,
I'm thinking, I mean, a couple of days ago, they said that he was thinking about Ron DeSantis.
Right.
For the role. And I think DeSantis probably turned him down. Otherwise, he wouldn't be still going with Hegseth.
I don't think that. I mean, I would say that he would put that out there just to mess with him because, one, that's the way he is. Two, in 2 years, DeSantis won't have a job, and he has nothing there's nothing coming up there he can run for, so he won't have a job. And three, I would assume that what he's trying to do is basically blackmail DeSantis into appointing whoever he wants for that Senate seat in Florida, probably his daughter-in-law, and then as soon as he does it, he'll give him a job.
Can you imagine that? I mean, come on. You know,
that's the way they
I've
work,
heard.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, I've heard about what's it called? Hiring your family. You know, that's always been considered bad form, not only for a president, but if you're the president of a company. You know, giving your relatives big major jobs in your company, unless it's a company that you established with them years ago and they were, you know, working on, and then you went and became a corporation. But, I mean, that's bad form. That's just bad form.
Yeah, I mean, I know you don't pay attention to it, but people who do will know. It's very common in professional sports. You know, owners of teams tend to have their son as the president of the team or, you know, things, you know, and some of them get more involved than others and some of them get way more involved than they should because they really don't have a clue. I mean, the fact that you own an NBA team or Major League Baseball team indicates only really in that realm one thing, and that was that you had enough money to buy the team.
Yeah, but the thing, the difference here is we're talking about the owner of a team.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay, it's not a corporation or whatever. He's the owner of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can hire your relatives, and it doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world. But if you're the head of a corporation, and now you're just, you know, you're making the vice president your uncle and your, you know, Secretary
of Arms. Yeah, I mean, in these professional sports, these are billion-dollar operations in a lot of cases. I mean,
yeah, but, you know, but you're
hundreds
still,
of millions of dollars of payroll per year.
Yeah, but you're using an operative word there, owner.
Yeah, right. No, I'm not arguing the point. I mean, I'm just saying it's not – my point is it's typically not good practice because a lot of the times those folks are not qualified for the positions that they get. They are only getting them because of their last name, you know, their family situation. You know, I mean, you take the guy that runs the local baseball team – and he is running it because his father owns it. But if his father didn't own it and his father was something else and he was applying for jobs to baseball teams, he would probably not even be able to get a low-level job, let alone as the guy who was running the team.
Right.
But and not just the team. I'm not talking about the field manager. I mean the whole organization, the TV contracts and, you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
So, yeah, it's typically not good, but the Trump people seem to do that all the time. And it's not good, and people really don't like it. People have never liked it, but then all of a sudden they were all okay.
And his corporations, we're going to have to use the big orange one. When he ran, like, Trump Enterprises or whatever that company was.
Right. It's a family thing, right?
Did he hired family, didn't he?
Yeah. But as far as I understand,
yeah. But then he also hired non-family, too. Guys he knew that later on would go to jail for him.
Right.
Yeah,
well, I mean, that's, you know, in a case like his, that sort of was the point of having non-family around, is you had expendable people that you could use up. And
you know where I felt he was really a slime bag? Who was that guy who was like, he was kind of running the company, you know, and he was doing all the dirty work for Donald Trump, all the illegal stuff for Donald Trump. And then when finally they catch him and he winds up going to jail, what did Trump do to get him out of jail? You know, what did Trump do to even pay his expenses? Nothing.
No.
It doesn't pay to be friends with him.
Right. Yeah, typically it doesn't, you know, but it's, you know, it's just kind of like a drug dealer. Drugs aren't really good for you, but, you know, you keep going back.
I got news for you.
That's sort of how they are with him.
Drugs are terrific for you. I just want to say that right now.
Yeah.
You know, if it weren't for pot, I couldn't sleep every night.
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, there are some things like that. I'm just saying even though something isn't good for you, some people are heavily addicted to whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's, you know, nudging up close to him. And even though it ruins their life in some cases, they can't help themselves.
But how can you even like a person who will do that to you? I mean, there were so many people that came along that he did it to, that as soon as they got in, okay, our former Giuliani.
Right.
Now, wouldn't you think that considering all that Giuliani did for him and all the lies that Giuliani told for him, that when he finally got into this jam with money now,
yeah,
that somehow he would get bailed out by Donald. That he would, or, you know, Donald's got enough money right now to bail him out. And he hasn't. Hasn't even helped him. And you know something? Giuliani's still there sucking his big orange dick. You know?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. There are people that are addicted to that. And, you know, like I said before, when you want the answer to why, I'm going to have to stick with what I've said before. You know, I don't know. I'm a historian. I can only tell you what happened. If you want to know why people did it, you got to go talk to a psychologist. You know, yeah. I mean, they're the experts in that. You know, I only analyze what's already after the fact, you know, so.
But we promised.
I don't know why Giuliani basically ruined his life for him, but he, by all appearances, has ruined his life, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
oh, yes.
For this person, you know? I mean, I don't know why. But
standing up for him, that's the point. And lying for him.
Yeah.
And going into places and into courtrooms and into whatever and lying to help him.
Hasn't been paid for his services yet either. And probably won't be.
Yeah.
And even if he gets it now, it isn't going to matter because they're going to garnish a good majority of the money and give it to those women in Georgia.
Yeah.
Really paying him now wouldn't do any good.
Well,
know?
Apparently in Georgia, he didn't have really good enough lawyers is the problem. And he would have had better lawyers if somebody we know had paid for better lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. No, I mean, there's no loyalty there. There's no loyalty there. And now... Oh, God, I hate talking about him. God, I don't want to take the spend the next 4 years talking about him.
Totally up to you. I don't
you know, I mean, Marjorie was mentioning everybody's kissing this guy's ass right now. They're all showing up in Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring, whether it's the Canadian prime minister and now the French prime minister, premier, or whatever that title is over there. Has invited him over this weekend to hang out at Notre Dame Cathedral. Yeah. I mean, it's like they're all trying to, like, curry favor with him. And I understand also that Comcast has somehow made overtures to talk to him and sit down with him and so on and is currying his favor because he wants them to sell off MSNBC because he hates them. And they don't want Trump to come after them while he's president. And now it's so bad that the latest thing is that our current president, Biden, is thinking about giving amnesty, right, to people who never even committed a crime because he thinks that Trump will go after them once he's president. People like, what's his name, the guy who did the whole COVID thing.
Fauci.
Mm-hmm. Fauci's on that list.
Liz
Cheney's on that list. Yeah, and he's thinking about giving them amnesty. You know, because he doesn't want Trump to be able to go after these people.
Oh yeah, you
he
know,
can
I mean,
do it. He can do it.
Yeah,
well within his constitutional power to do so. So. You know, I'm sure that there would be complaints because that's just the normal operation. But, you know, when other people, such as Trump, do things, the argument is always, well, you know, it's well within his constitutional power, blah, blah, blah. So I think, you know, that we've reached a point where.
That's basically why he did it for Hunter Biden.
Sure.
Because he knew that
the power to do so. I mean,
yeah, but he knew that Trump would immediately go after him.
Yeah.
Make
life miserable. Yeah.
But you know, I mean, if Democrats want to return themselves to power and leadership,
mm-hmm.
I think it's okay if along the way they flex their muscles sometimes and do things and say, "The hell with what the other side says."
Well, who cares if a bunch of Republicans complain? They're always going to complain.
I mean, I think they need to do a lot of other things other than that. But I'm just saying as a point that if they make Fox News go crazy for a few days, I don't care. They're going to go crazy.
Now, another deal altogether, I've got to really say what a wonderful police department we have here in New York City. I mean, somebody commits a crime, they're right there and they catch him. These guys, yesterday, the police department's going, "Oh, we're going to get him any minute now. We're going to get him any minute now." Today, they're saying, "Well, we think he left town."
You know, I don't like the way they've covered that as much. And, I mean, I'm not a care either way. You know, I mean, to me, you know, a crime was committed. They need to do what they need to do. But I just, you know, if my wife and I had visited New York City and someone had gunned me down in the middle of the street, they would have just been like, killed and went to lunch or whatever. But because somebody got killed that they feel is apparently important, you know, they're mostly because of the media. I'm sure the NYPD.
No, I agree with you. That was one of the first thoughts I had because he was the CEO of United Health.
Yeah.
Immediately, it's a big deal. If it were just a normal person getting shot down on the street in New York City, it might make the news for about a minute.
There, it probably would.
For about a minute and a half. And
right.
You go, that's New York City. You know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's I thought that's it, that. I mean, it's just all just stupid and over the top. I mean, and I'm not saying that as in I'm not like celebrating the fact that it was the president of a healthcare company. I mean, look, like I said,
oddly enough,
they need to do what they need to do.
I know you weren't feeling any happiness over it happening to a guy, but I was. So,
I mean, I'm not gonna lie that I didn't. You know, the headline, I didn't break down with tears or anything.
The internet was was rife with people going good, you know. People were just, they had, what do you call it? What's the word I'm looking for? Mini BCF. Okay. It's a new iPad for Bree. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a new piece of equipment. Yeah. Anyway, no, what I was saying is that when I heard about this yesterday, I had that kind of same reaction a lot of people had on the internet. You know, this guy, through his policies at United Health, has killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to feel sorry for him. And people say, well, you know, that's never a solution to a problem. Well, I got news for you. Yesterday, Anthem or is it? United has a subsidiary, and they said that they were not going to allow anesthesiologists more than a certain amount of time per operation.
Yeah.
Which is insane. I mean, you're being operated on, and all of a sudden they go, sorry, you got to cut down the gas because it's a time that you don't get that much time. And people were going crazy over this. Well, yesterday, after this guy got shot, they decided to change their policy immediately. And the other companies that were thinking of engaging in the same policy said the same exact thing. So when you say that this kind of action is inappropriate and doesn't get anything done, well, apparently it did.
Yeah. Well, I didn't say that.
Huzzah.
I just said, you know, that the police got to go, you know, there was a crime committed, and the police got to go do their thing.
They got to go after it, but the fact is, the guy probably got, they think he's out of town now, that he's gone.
It's been 2 days or something, geez.
You know, yeah.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
I disagree right now with the reason why it's being covered so much is not because he's some rich CEO guy, blah, blah, blah. It's because everyone just kind of realizes that this was a message. And this is something you can't stop. You have these people who will go and do these illegal things to right wrongs that they see. All of this is about this undertone of, well, I guess the CEOs, I mean, these people, this is capitalism. You know, I don't know. Like, I think this is getting the correct amount of exposure because of who he is. I
agree with you on that, only in that it is creating a discussion about that whole medical part of the medical system and these insurance companies, which, by the way, up until Reagan, had to be nonprofit. So this part of it, this component wasn't in it, you know. And, you know, who knows why this guy did it, but the bullets had a message on them, and it's, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say it was somebody close to him who died because they were denied medical by the insurance companies, you know. Either that or it's somebody who paid somebody to do it, because that looked like a really professional hitman when he did it. Except that he couldn't shoot straight. He got him in the leg first before he got him in the back.
I was shocked by, I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of a gun fanatic guy, but I don't know anything about silencer suppressors because I live in New Jersey. Apparently, this thing hindered the blowback so much where he had to manually pull the slide back every time.
Yeah.
But he – I'm going down a rabbit hole. I'm sorry. But he dropped a cell phone, and, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it was a professional hit at all. I think they're going to catch this guy.
They say he dropped a cell phone, but I haven't heard that since, okay? I heard it once, and I didn't hear it again.
But it was a burner.
You know what? Me too. You're right.
And it could have been a burner phone too. You know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
If it were a cell phone, wouldn't they have caught him already or know exactly who he is?
Yesterday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Was so good that he put oil on his fingers so he wouldn't leave fingerprints on his Starbucks cup.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the guy was, you know, knew what he was doing. And he knew where this guy was staying. And, you know, it might be somebody in the company. You know, so it's really fascinating, actually. You know, but am I going to feel sorry for the guy who got killed? Not really. You know, not till my insurance price goes down. You know.
Yeah.
I'm such a radical. I was talking to a customer today. I was working on this heater, and he was telling me about the cost of insurance and all. I said to him, I go, this country, I'm a capitalist. I own a company.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, but. You know, there are some things that fundamentally we need to do as a society, take care of each other.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, I keep saying that I've gotten to hate America. And I hate America because I hate Americans. Why do I hate Americans? Because if we were good people, we would have insurance for everybody. But we're not good people. We don't take care of each other. We're very selfish to each other.
We elect narcissists.
Yeah.
We elect narcissists.
Yeah.
sociopaths. I agree. I'm sorry.
How do you feel about it? Oh, guess who's there? Bree with his brand new mini pad. Yeah, much better picture and
yeah,
you know.
I knew that this would be. This would be better, you know. It even follows me, Alex, when I go like this.
I know that all the iPads do that now. Yeah, yeah. You can turn that all that feature off. It's called staging or stage, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Keeping it on. I turn mine off because it doesn't work very well, you know, for a lot of things. It's I like to be able to control my picture, so I like it to be steady.
But well, Alex, you asked yeah, about that. And I would say that I heard this guy's salary was like $10 million a year.
Was it?
If you're $10 million, I think you can afford a, you know, security detail.
He didn't have a security detail, no. And he'd had threats. You know, so whatever, you know.
Yeah, the security. You know, people—they're going to get a lot of calls today from CEOs of health companies saying how much cover me. You know,
yeah. Oh, right. And also, all these companies yesterday went back on their whole anesthetic thing because somebody got shot. That people say violence doesn't solve anything in this country, but I got news for you. That was once again proof that violence does solve problems. That's the only thing America understands is violence. Unless somebody commits violence, they won't listen. You know? First they go, oh, that's terrible that they were violent. And then they go, why were they violent? Are they going to be violent against me? We have to be nicer to that group of people. You know, so. I don't know. That's just me. Am I wrong, Josh?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, violence is a long-standing way to get what you want.
Well, you know, they didn't listen to blacks in America until blacks started demonstrating and rioting and, you know, things like the Black Panthers came along. Then all of a sudden they were going to listen, you know?
I mean, this, as it relates to politics, I mean, there is a swelling up of, you know, a populist movement in this country that is combined with some nationalism, well, a lot of it actually, but as part of a populist movement, I mean, it's not limited to just politics. Those movements tend to have, you know, economic underlayment to them that is what motivates people towards that. And a good part of that is, you know, anti-corporate type of attitudes. So, you know, now this may be obviously like completely like personal, you know, if it turns out to be that. I'm just saying that that's why people are not really reacting the way that you think they might. Oh, that's so sad or whatever. That populist, anti-economic establishment, corporations, CEOs making $10 million a year in base pay and who knows how much in stock options, right?
Yeah.
And bonus pays. And then that same company, you know, denies a treatment that, you know, you need or whatever. That's why people saw the story, you know, and said, eh, you know, so what? I mean, it's, you know, it's, they looked at it like, you know, the crackhead down on the corner, you know, OD'd last night. Oh, you know, okay. No more crackhead on the corner. Who gives a shit, right? You know, I mean, that's how they were looking at it. So,
well, you know, something that happened was, you know, there was an argument that a heroin years ago was being being distributed to black neighborhoods precisely with the purpose of sedating them. You know? It was part of the power there. White people, on the whole, did not do heroin until a little bit later on. But you know, they didn't do heroin. So until it came into the white community and whites started doing it and the white kids were doing it, all of a sudden then it's like, we got to do something about heroin. We got to do something about this drug or that drug. You know, it wasn't until the white populace got caught up in the middle of it. And then it was just horrible. It was just horrible. Then they picked on drugs that weren't even dangerous, you know. Oh, that LSD, it's going to ruin our youth. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Demon weed.
Huh?
And don't forget the demon weed.
Oh, demon weed. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, weed was made illegal by a guy by the name of Harry J. Anslinger, who was working for whoever the narcotics people were back in the 30s. And he wanted to kind of get a job. So he demonized this drug called marijuana, which was basically his reefer. And they did it basically in black neighborhoods, but among jazz musicians and so on and so forth. And it wasn't. We all know now it wasn't dangerous. But Henry J. Anslinger, the little slimy bastard, wanted to get a better job in the drug enforcement community. So what did he do? He went ahead and started this movement to get marijuana illegal. And he started spreading stories into newspapers about people jumping out of buildings because they are high on pot. And then there was this movie which we laid our hands on called Reefer Madness, which again, you know, produced a situation in which, you know, people were going, oh, my God, you know, see that? See how people are when they're high on marijuana? And it became illegal because this guy wanted a better job. And Anslinger, about in the 50s, somebody finally was interviewing him when he was on his deathbed and said, did you really think marijuana was dangerous? And he said, oh, I never thought it was dangerous. I just wanted a better job. And how many people went to jail? How many people went to prisons as a result of having, you know, used marijuana? Terrible. Terrible. So, you know, unless it hits the white community, it doesn't really start becoming a problem. You know, then it's a problem. Then you got to make it illegal. I'd never have loved this country because of that kind of behavior. Yeah. Hello, Don Giller.
I need to give a little pushback.
Oh, okay.
If I may.
Do a little pushback.
You're equating the anesthesia policy changed because of the killing. And it's a theory, but you're making it a proof.
No, I'm not making it a proof. I'm saying...
You did. You actually said proof. You proved that violence can affect...
I'm saying that isn't it strange, okay, that all of a sudden, after this happened, they changed a policy they had already put into force, one of these
but
companies.
But that's different from what you actually said.
Oh, okay.
You were making a causation.
You know, if I had a Jiminy Cricket in my life, it would be you.
I'm just trying to keep you honest, that's all.
Yeah, well, it's okay. Let me put my nose back in now. I guess I should have said that it seemed to have some kind of causal effect on that.
Yeah, as do all the gun killings that have had such an effect on gun control.
Well, I mean, they have. Somebody said yesterday about this will stop the insurance companies dead in their tracks. They're going to stop. They're going to think better themselves. And I said, yeah, for about a week. You know, everything lasts for about a week, and then we're right back to our old pattern of behavior.
Yeah, I just, we don't know if there's if there was any relationship whatsoever.
You don't think those guys at those
times? I'm not saying I don't think there was.
They were sitting in their office that morning going, oh, my God, number one, double the people who are watching me and taking care of me. And also, you know that thing we were going to put into effect about anesthesia? Yeah, I think we should hold back on it for a while.
Yeah, but it's lazy thinking.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a lazy thinker. Don't you know? Haven't you listened to me?
Oh, of course. What was I thinking? I'm sorry.
You know, and you're my Jiminy Cricket. You know, you call up and you say, Alex, don't do that. That, you know.
All I know is you're wearing the same T-shirt you wore in Europe. That vintage.
This is the one I took with me to Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we didn't pack very much. We just packed. I packed one pair of pants and a shirt, T-shirt, and then a couple of T-shirts, rather, and then this sweatshirt, you know. But how many sweatshirts do I need, you know?
Six.
Six?
One per year.
One per, I say, okay. No, I have a whole bunch of them. Last night I was wearing my John Lennon, I think, or maybe I wasn't.
I have a question. It's wholly unrelated to everything you've all been talking about. But then again, segues are not my strong point.
Right.
I'm filling out an online order form where everything, you know, there are spaces and squares for you to fill in. You know what you're looking, what you want to buy, your name, address, you know, age, birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're required, a signature is required,
mm-hmm.
but there's no mechanism to sign anything. There's no lock or box that allows you to type in your name that will serve as a signature. There's nothing. So I'm wondering if anybody here has dealt with that
I've dealt with those things that say signature, but then you just type in your name.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But there's no such box to do that.
What company was this? Anybody we know?
Everyone. Ohio History.
Yeah, oh, no one yeah. We all know about Ohio History.
Yeah. I mean, so why even ask?
Yeah. Why am I over at, excuse me for a moment, at Brian Sigmund's picture? Am I just seeing a box?
Mm-hmm. If you hear these.
Of somebody he got, something he got. Oh, you get that? Is that something you got and you're putting together or what? Ryan?
Yeah, that's amazing. Yes, it's something I got and something I'm putting together right now.
And what
that's amazing.
And what is it exactly?
It is Roku speakers for a Roku TV.
Oh.
So I have surround sound.
Alex,
you're...
What?
Yeah, you're amazing.
Soundbar, right?
Yeah, I have a soundbar and surround sound, subwoofer, the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I went out and I bought, what brand did I buy? I bought a couple of pretty expensive ones, you know. Those things are good. They're really good. I used to be against them, but they're now they're good.
Yeah, no, they're really good. And then I'm pretty impressed that you what did you see?
I saw the edge of the box that said something on it. I didn't know it was Roku, but I should have known by the coloring, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
Oh, there we go. Okay. And the actual soundbar has the Roku in it. Right?
No. This particular one, it's the TV, and it communicates with the Roku, and then, there's the sound, there's the subwoofer, there's one of the speakers. Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy you got it. Congratulations.
Look,
it's the same box.
No, that's his box.
Oh, that's his box. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Playing it back, I think.
Yes. If you hear these, what does the rest of the box say? Yeah, well, I should have known that was like a Roku, because that's the color Roku uses. You know.
Yeah, but, this is a very hard hitting talk show.
Yeah, it is really. It's one of the reasons why Josh calls this program, is to talk about Roku speakers.
Hey, can I tell you something? So sure. I was thinking about the last time I was on. I really feel like the Democrats. I'm a registered Democrat. I can't vote for a sociopath like Donald Trump, mm-hmm. you know, and I try to talk my dad out of it unsuccessfully, but.
So you had to kill him, huh?
No, but my point is that there is some soul searching that needs to be done with some of the positions that we take.
Yeah.
And I don't see it. Like, I listen to Pod Save America, The Bulwark, The Midas Touch. I listen to a whole slew of podcasts because I'm a junkie. I'm a talk show junkie.
Yeah, but why do you listen? Here's a good question. I mean, why do you listen to these podcasts? Who are these people? Why are they an authority? I often said, people used to say to me, oh, Alex, you're so important because you're an authority. And I said, there's only one reason I'm an authority. I'm on the radio. I have the bully pulpit to talk about this stuff. But basically, I don't know any more than anybody else. I just have a radio show.
No. What I mean is these are left-leaning things.
Yeah, that's fine. And, but, you know, even if you immerse yourself in that, I mean, what makes them so knowledgeable that they're worth listening to and forming opinions from?
Well, my point is that I don't see anybody really doing some soul searching on the left. Like, there's some policies that the left has been insane about, and all we've done is hand the country over to Trump. I heard a great quote. One was, any borders that the liberals fail to defend or police, a fascist would gladly do it. And that's really what I see what's going on. Like, I thought personally that the right needed a reset more than the left.
You want to know something? No, I got to tell you where you're wrong. I read a piece of information today, okay? And this was in a site that deals with broadcasting and so on. And now that after the election is over, and you might be interested in this, Josh, and you too, Kevin. The rest of you are dummies, so it doesn't matter. But they have found that where Trump won the election, at least in the numbers, was because of what they call news deserts. There are places in this country that do not have news broadcasts. And those specific areas of the country were the areas where Trump won by something like 79 or sometimes 90% because they were news deserts. You don't believe that, Josh?
I call bullshit. 100% I call bullshit. We're so tuned in with our phones and stuff like that, and there are deserts because we get into an algorithm. Like, we can talk about that.
There are places in this country where they don't have a local radio station, local TV station, or anything like that, that are known as media deserts.
Okay, hang your hat on that.
They're called North Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana, and no one there voted for Trump because they couldn't watch the news.
Now, I don't think the left should hang their hat on that theory. I think that's wrong. I think there's a long look in the mirror that we have to look at ourselves and go, you know, there are things that the left has ignored for a long time, and this was kind of the election where either the right or the left were going to get a massive reset, And I thought, I said, there's no way Trump was getting elected. No way. He's a fucking narcissist, sociopath. Like, but they elected him.
Look, we can sit around and Monday morning quarterback this whole thing for the next, 10 years, but it doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do us any good.
Well, what do you mean it doesn't do us any good?
You don't control the Democratic Party, and I don't control the Democratic Party, nor what they do or how they do it. You know? And so because I have no control over that, why Monday? Vote. Huh? Well, what do you say, Kevin?
Vote.
Yeah. When it's time to vote.
It's about ditching the effing crazy. I've been saying this for years. The first party to ditch their lunatics is the party that'll take power for the next 10 years.
Both sides have lunatics.
Yeah, and our lunatics have been so they've been so disconnected from reality that it turns out that I was wrong. It turns out I was wrong in that the Republicans aren't getting the reset. We're getting the reset.
Okay, let's let a few other people here talk. Josh, you have something to say about this?
I think, that the Democratic Party should be adjusting their positions on several issues. I never understood why party-wide, basically, they took certain positions, they were not election-winning.
Well, a lot of people,
and I don't think they were the right policies either.
A lot of people say that the thing that lost the Democrats to other people was the transsexual question. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't say that issue alone. I would say there were several issues that the Democratic Party is just not on the path of that the American people, by and large, are. Some of the issues are larger than others. I mean, for example, Let me ask you this.
Do you think the Democrats lost their way when they no longer became the party of the working man?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think they stopped being party of the working man?
I said before that if you were to go watch President Clinton's 1992 acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention, I'm telling you, you could have rolled that speech out and gave it this July and just changed some names, because that was the platform that Trump ran on. Damn near the same platform, with the exception maybe being abortion, that President Clinton ran on in 1992.
Really?
And Democrats had a lot of success with that model up until, the turn of the century, when they slowly began moving more toward some other policies that I just don't think played well. And they're also not very good at arguing their point, and they have allowed themselves to get dragged into those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Purposefully, even though those issues are not really worth arguing about.
Okay.
As we said, for an example, the bathroom deals and things like that. Finally, this year, when they tried to pull a stunt and the Capitol, Nancy Mace and all them, the new transgender member said, it's fine, I'll pee wherever you want, And
That was a great answer. Yeah.
Tie up a news cycle for 3 weeks with the Democrats protesting and, we're going to show up for a legislative session until everyone can pee equally and, all that kind of stuff, because that wasn't going to go anywhere. Some of these things are not necessarily for what I think I would do for people. I'm just saying, it's not all my own personal I'm just saying, as a party, they've got to understand that it's not always enough to be right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish that it were, but it's not. You can't just be right. You have to be right and you have to have power. And sometimes those things don't coalesce, you know? I mean,
yeah. Brian has called, Brian Neary, and he's down there in his portrait mode.
You can turn is this better?
If you turn, better? Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, that's better.
See? I think I did that one time. Maybe my phone was on lock, and you guys said I was sideways.
Yeah, yeah, but that's good. That's good now.
I just think there's too many. I think there are too many people who are going to vote for Trump no matter what, and I don't know how a person can be on the fence. I just don't see it, and then the women, I just don't see it. So,
well, these people who were saying, you see them on television because they were happy to run them every time they could. Said, well, I haven't made up my mind yet. This was like on Sunday, you know? And I'm going, you haven't made up your mind yet?
It's not like they were close candidates, and it's like, ooh, one subject is going to sway them on something. I think it's just they're just two big opposites.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the one subject they got stuck them on was the economy, and Trump kept calling them the economy. Yeah. And these people don't do any research, so they just say, oh, yeah, they're going to make my Cheerios cheaper.
Well, what's interesting is that every indicator in the economy is that it's as good as it has been in years.
Yeah, but they don't listen. They hear what he says.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
But I'm telling you, I saw this shit-out car with a stupid Trump bumper sticker, and I drove by it looking at the guy just thinking, like, do you really think in the next 4 years you're going to get an upgrade in that car because of him?
You may not be able to
afford
a new car because of him.
They're still standing on the overpass.
On the overpass,
down Morgan Hill. Morgan Hill.
Yes.
Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
They line the overpass with flags and all that shit, and they stand there and slow down traffic.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. That's one of the biggest corridors we have.
You know, I guess I'm just saying that, you know, as far as their policy and their national platform and stuff goes, and again, don't take everything I'm saying as something I want, but I'm just saying, for example, why would any Democrat, you know, on the national level, congressmen, senators, why would any of them oppose a policy or law that says if you're found in this country and you're an illegal alien, you don't have a green card, you don't have any kind of papers whatsoever, we're deporting you? Why would any Democrat oppose that? I mean, now I know we could probably come up with some reasons here, but I'm just saying as a policy, you're going to have a hard time finding almost anybody.
Well, I'll tell you something.
Huge swaths of the country that says
that's not a good idea. We're running out of time here, but let me just say that I'm a Jew, and during World War II, any Jew who wanted to come into this country under those conditions was not allowed to.
Right.
And so when I hear that there are people who want to come into this country, and maybe they don't get a green card, and maybe they have to wade across the Rio River, believe me, I take pity with them, because my relatives died as a result of American policies. They took one boat of Jews that came from Europe, and as it got into the port of New York, made it turn around and go across the ocean and dump them off in Germany.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't understand some of it.
So I understand anybody who wants to find refuge in this country because they think they can find a better life here. They're sadly mistaken, but you know.
Which is my point. I'm just telling you, if you walk around everywhere except maybe the most liberal parts of this country, 8 out of 10 people are going to be like, no.
Yeah.
You got to get in line.
Hey, there's our theme song. I really don't have to get off that fast because Amy isn't on tonight.
I just wanted to play the part of Don Geller tonight. That's the only reason I called.
Well, you came too late to play the part of Don Geller.
But, do better.
Or Dan Gillard, whoever it is.
Dan Gillard. Dan Geiler.
Jan Dillard, whatever.
Called earlier tonight because he wanted to be my Jiminy Cricket. So, you know, whatever. Hey, thanks, Josh. I appreciate it as always. And Charlie, I appreciate it. And Brian, I hope that all gets put together right, you know, before it's time for you to go to sleep. But enjoy your Roku surround sound. Oh, Don, it's so nice to have you here. When are you coming over to see me?
Well, I was just going to say, I'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay, come on over tomorrow night. What time?
What time would you like?
Why don't you come by at 7? Okay?
Okay.
And we'll just hang out and we'll, you know, have some sodas and whatever.
We need a picture of proof, please.
Yes.
Play badminton?
We will need a picture.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it. And thanks, of course, to Brian for being here tonight. Everybody, give a big wave goodbye, and I'll give a big wave goodbye at you, okay? There they go, ladies and gentlemen. That's our citizen panel for tonight. There is no Amy tonight. There won't be again on Wednesday, but I will be here again on Monday, different time. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we'll be at on Facebook, and then we'll be back here again on Wednesday, same time, same station in life. In the meantime, as always, if you see her, you know, of course, tell her I love her. Bye, everybody.